evening. We'll... Oh, sorry.
Is it okay to record it?
It's fine. Okay, we'll continue with the halachas that we left off this week. This week we discussed the basic halachas of basa v'chalav, how they play out in not getting mixed together, and the halachas of having them on the table at the same time, waiting in between eating them. Today I would like to go a step further and discuss different rules that come out from the halachas that we could use. And again, if we're more familiar with the issues, then it's easier to ask a question and it's easier to get a correct answer. So there's different ways of basa v'chalav being mixed with each other. You can have a piece of meat and a piece of dairy, and they're mixed together, they're cooked together. Sometimes it could just be a matter of flavor or taste that went from one into the other. And usually that will be the transfer of the taste or flavor that's going from one to the other is through heat. That's the most common way of transferring taste to another food or to even to a pot or a spoon, through the heat of the fire. Now, in order for the transfer to take place through the heat of the fire, the item has to be at the degree of what we call Yad Soledesba, which is between 110 and 160 degrees Fahrenheit. But if it's less than that, if both pieces are less than that degree, then no taste will transfer from one to the other. So what happens if I have two pieces of I have a piece of meat and a piece of cheese which were cold and they touched each other, or anything which is dairy or meat or fleishig that touched each other cold? What are the dinim? So here it's really a logical call. If they're dry and they touched each other, and the assumption is that nothing rubbed off from one onto the other, so then there's no problem. If one of them is a little crummy, and maybe some crumbs rubbed off onto the other one, so then I have to get rid of those crumbs that rubbed off onto the other one. If it's greasy, so then I'm going to have to scrub it. It's not going to be enough to just wash it off. I'll have to scrub it. If it's something which you can't scrub, so then you'll have to cut off a very thin slice from the point of contact. But that's the rule. When two cold things will touch each other, and one is meat, one is fleshy, one is dairy, then we work with what's most logical in order that we should not come to eat fleshy with milchik. Now you can have a case where you have something which is hot, but it's not in the Kli Rishon, it's in the Kli Sheni. For example, I made a coffee or a tea, and the way I make the coffee is I take the water from the hot water urn and I pour it into a cup. So the hot water urn is what we refer to as the Kli Rishon, the Kli itself that's heating up, that the water is being heated up on top of the fire is the Kli Rishon. Then when the water is transferred from that place into a second kli, into a second utensil, so then that's called a kli sheni. So I have hot water in a kli sheni, and it's a coffee, and I pour milk into the kli sheni, and assuming that it's still hot, yad soledesba, and then I took a fleishig spoon and I mixed it, the answer is that since it's a kli sheni, there's no transfer of blias from the coffee into the cup. So again, when it's in a Kli Rishon, then it's an issue. In a Kli Sheni, it will not be a issue. That won't be an issue.
The spoon's okay.
Yeah. Now, it's important. Therefore, it's important when speaking to the Rav to speak out. Was it in the Kli Rishon or in the Kli Sheni? Where is it? Now, there is a difference between liquid and solid. Something which is solid, like a hot piece of meat, which was taken off from the pot which was made in, or from the fire, put onto a second plate, then it retains its heat and will still have the din like a kli rishon, so then it could create still issues. But if it was liquid like a coffee, so then the spoon would be fine. So it's important to tell the Rav, was the kli rishon, kli sheni, what are we dealing with? Liquid, solid. Also, even by liquid, even by solids, it would depend on if there's liquid there with the salad or not. When the two hot, when two hot pieces touch each other, if there's liquid, the taste will transfer further than if there's no liquid. If there's no liquid, so then it may just go in the where the point of contact is, and it's enough to just cut off a small part. As opposed to if there's liquid, that will cause it to transfer through the whole piece. Or if it's oily or greasy, it could transfer the whole piece. So therefore, again, bottom line is that not always does the food become usser completely, even if they are hot. And when speaking to the Rav, give over the important pieces of information, and then the answer will come. Now, if let's say someone defrosts meat in a dairy pot or in the dairy sink, so what's needed? What should be done now? All you need to do is wash out the pot or the sink. It was cold, and no heat at all. And even though the meat might have touched the pot or touched the sink, it's enough just to wash it out. If one ate cereal with milk in a fleishig bowl, cold cereal, so then again, just wash out the bowl and there's no problem. Yeah.
It doesn't make a difference how long, like if it's a frosty meat, it's sitting in the oven for a while. Does it make a difference, or
is it only the time? The only time it would make a difference if you had a milkier liquid and sat in a fleishig pot for 24 hours, or if it was sharp or something like that. But just a piece of meat won't make a difference. You can sit there as long as you want.
A meat that defrosts has liquid that's
defrosted. That's not enough liquid.
In all these cases, if we know the halacha, do we still add and call it out?
If you're comfortable that you know the halacha, if it's the exact same example, then you don't have to. If you're not sure, then call.
Is it okay if we wash it out with hot water?
Oh, that's a very good point. Now, when washing, first wash it with cold water. Because if you're going to wash it with hot water, and the water is hot enough to create a blia, to create a transfer over here, then all you're doing is you're taking your fleishig bowl and now making the milk go into your fleishig bowl. You were safe until now. So therefore, first rinse it out with cold water so there's no milk left in the bowl, and then you can wash it with hot water. When we talk about cold and hot, again, it's dependent on the temperature. The hot is at the degree of 110 or whatever it may be. Okay, now, another example that could happen. One touched some pizza, your child touched some pizza, and his hands are greasy from the oily pizza. And then he touches a meat dish. So then it's not enough to just rinse the bowl out. You need to scrub it because the oil, it has an oily grease there. So it might need more than washing, it'll need scrubbing. Again, just use your logic. Let's say you open your fridge and you see that the milk, which was being stored on the top shelf, somehow leaked, and now in the bowl that you're defrosting your meat or your chicken in, or if you're not defrosting, or sitting on the bottom shelf, now has milk in that bowl. So over here, it's a little more complicated because meat has cracks in it. And even sometimes chicken, also if it's cooked, has folds and cracks. Where we're worried that perhaps the milk seeped into the meat and there's like a pocket over there of some milk that will not come out with just washing it or even scrubbing the outside of it. So then, that may make it usser to use. Now, in general, we'll say that washing it off is not enough. However, if it's a hefsid or erev Shabbos, or you're cooking for a sheva brachas, so you're stuck, then it's worthwhile asking a rav. And there are cases where we will be lenient with just washing it or scrubbing it and doing what you need to do. If it's chicken, since we mentioned last week that chicken is drabanan, so then also there's more etzes to be lenient. So be in touch with the Rav before you just throw it out. Now we now what we're discussing over here, this concept of a blia, that there's a transfer of taste that goes from one item to the other item. Similarly, it's possible to have a transfer of taste going from the food into the pot or the pan. For example, if let's say I cooked in a pot meat, and then I take the meat out and I clean the pot out, this pot, even though it's clean from meat, there's no meat in the pot, but the pot has in it flavoring from the meat. So now if I will go and use this pot to make hot chocolate milk or to do something dairy in this pot, what's happening is that flavoring from the meat that went into the walls of the pot is now coming out through the heat into the milk that's in the pot, and is creating over here a mixture of milk with meat flavoring, and that's a problem. And if one would do this, then that milk, if we're dealing with meat, so we, like we mentioned last week, there's a iser to benefit from it. You can't even give it to your cleaning lady. Or the other way around, you have a pot that you cook something dairy in it, and then you cooked in it meat, and now the dairy flavoring is going into your meat. You cannot give this meat to the cleaning lady because it's iser to benefit from it. If it was chicken, we mentioned, then it's mutter to benefit from it, so you could give that to your cleaning lady. However, there are two important rules over here, which I want to discuss now. Two important rules, which could make a big difference many times. Rule number one is, there's what's called ben yomo, and there's what's called ene ben yomo. Ben yomo means this was used within the last 24 hours for that type. Within the last 24 hours, I used this for dairy. Einoi ben yomo means this was not used within the last 24 hours. What's the difference? The difference is that the taste that goes, the flavoring that goes into the walls of the pot turns stale after 24 hours. It's stale. And the Torah only considered fresh taste that will make something aser, as opposed to once it's stale, it cannot make the food aser. Therefore, the only time when I cook my meat in this milchiga pot will my meat be a problem is if I use this pot within the last 24 hours for milchig. But if I did not use this pot within the last 24 hours for milchig, then that meat is fine. You can eat that meat. The pot, however, the pot will need to be kashered, because now the walls of my pot have stale dairy bleas and also fresh meat bleas, and that's a problem. So again, this is an example where sometimes people are very quick to throw the food out and call and ask what's the story with my pot, and I'll say the food's fine. They'll say, oh, anyways, food's I threw the food out. But the rule is that if the only time the food will become us is if this pot was used within the last 24 hours for the other type. If let's say we're not sure, we have a suffix, we're not sure if the pot was used within the last 24 hours for dairy and now I made something flashing in it, then out we make the assumption that it was not used within the last 24 hours. And again, the food is fine, but the pot needs to be kosher. And this extends to many cases where I have a spoon. I use my spoon to mix the food on the fire, and then I realized the spoon is from the other type, right? I was cooking something, I was cooking a cholent, and then I was using a milchiga spoon to stir it. So if the spoon was used within the last 24 hours, so then we need to deal with, is this cholent okay or not okay, which we'll get into that in the next with the next rule. But there's issue over here. We need to figure out if the chalent is fine or not. But if the spoon was not used within the last 24 hours, then the chalent is fine. The spoon will always need to be kashe. Okay. So the next rule is what's called shishin. Shishin, the rule of shishin is also an important rule. It's, let's say I had my chalent. I have a meat pot cooking chalent, and a drop of milk landed up in the pot. I was shaking the baby's bottle, or shaking the milk bottle, and a drop went spritzing out and landed perfect aim, went right into the chalent pot inside. So the question now is, how much milk do we assume fell in there? And is there in the contents of the pot, we take into cheshbon everything that's in the pot. We include, if it's a chalent, the potatoes, the beans, the barley, the liquid, everything in the pot. Do I have within that 60 times in volume, 60 times the volume of the drop of milk that fell in there? If I do have 60 times that milk that fell in there, the chalent is fine. So the same thing with the spoon. If I had this milchig spoon that was used within the last 24 hours with hot milchig on the fire, and then I go and I stir my chalent with it, and it was a clean spoon, so there's no milk on the spoon, but we look at the part of the spoon that went into the chalent, let's say it was half the spoon, do I have in my chalent 60 times the volume, 60 times the size, the space of the spoon? And the spoon is probably less volume than you think it is, so you could measure with distillment, with water, or you could, if I could fit 60 of those spoons in the contents of the pot, then the food is fine, even though this was a spoon that was used within the last 24 hours. So again, this rule is, if the shishim, if there's 60 times it, is what?
The spoon's not okay, right?
Sorry?
The spoon.
Always has to be kash.
Is the chalent pot then kashe, or is the spoon?
If the food is fine, then the pot won't have to be, because it never got to the pot. I'll give you another interesting example. They sell this chicken soup mix, which is fleshy. There's parp and there's fleshy. So what happens many times is, you're making a milchige soup, and you want to put some chicken soup mix in it, or a parp soup, and you want to put some chicken soup mix in it, and you put a spoonful, two spoonfuls, whatever it may be, and then you realize afterwards it says fleshy. So the truth is, the amount of fleshig that there is in the container is so little, it's such a small amount that I think you guarantee that you sure have shishim keneged that fleshig. What it means is as follows: even though I may not have 60 spoonfuls in my pot, but the amount of fleshig that there is in each spoonful is so small, is a small amount, that I for sure have 60 against whatever fleshig was in there, most cases.
It doesn't matter that it affects the taste?
You're not tasting the fleshig, you're tasting all the other chemicals and things that are there. Right? If you're tasting the fleshig, even though there's 60, then it'll be a problem. But you're not tasting the fleshig, you're tasting all the other stuff that's there. It's like a lemon. You go to a hotel, and then they give you a cup of Coke with a lemon on it. So it's not a problem, because even though they may cut it with a non-kosher knife, and there's some bleed going in, but the lemon is made of packets of juice, so they only cut a few packets, and there's very small amount of juice that's dripping into your cup of Coke, which is probably 60 against whatever please went into that amount. So even though you're tasting the lemon, but you're not tasting this, it's fine.
All these things aren't even together. You should tell them.
Of course, the chatzchila, you shouldn't get into it, but I'm saying, yeah. Okay, yeah, right, like we saw this week, as much as possible, we try to stay away from these things. Okay, another example would be, that came up once, someone sprayed their pan with Pam, and they made the hamburgers, and then they realized that it was butter flavored. So in that situation, we sent an email to the OU, and the OU said that there's so little milking in that it's probably bottled already in the can. So again, so I'm just pointing out that a lot of times, if you use these rules of ben yame, ain't ben yame, or shishim, or not shishim, there's a lot. There's room to save a lot of things. Yeah.
The rule of batul shishim applies what was in the pot when you added and ingredient, right? Like if I put chicken.
Correct. That's a good point. Right. If you can add in afterwards, it may not help. Right. In most cases. Yeah.
For some reason,
we're going to discuss Dov Chrib separately. We'll discuss Dov Chrib separately. Yeah.
Which sink should you wash the offending?
If you're using cold water, it doesn't really make a difference. And then just rinse out the sink.
Or like your cereal bowl, if it's still out a little milk. So
use the milk and go sink. Are they such? Yeah.
Let's say your spoon. You use it within 24 hours, though, but for only cold milk. Is that
no, let's make that clear. Ben Yomo is that you use that utensil in a klirishin, either on the fire or off the fire. Let's say in the pot of chal that was on the fire, or even if I took the pot off the fire, I used it to stir in the pot, and it was still very hot. But if it was not used in the klirishin, then it's not going to be
But I'm saying the spoon itself was used yesterday for whole
That's milk. Not going to make it a milchiga spoon. That's why many times people pull up, I cut the meat on a milchiga cutting board. How did your cutting board become milchig? Because you use it for milk, it doesn't make it milchig. and saying things like that. What?
An onion.
Yeah, it won't make it milchig. We'll discuss in the next year. We'll first see if onions are charif.
What if you
got
a hot pan and you start with that something?
I should?
It's
not going to make the. In my opinion, at least. I'm not even sure if onions are charif, but we'll discuss that next year. It's hard. Sometimes it's hard to know when the shishim or not. If you speak to a rav, he may be able to help you figure it out. With his experience. Okay, so till now we're discussing where milk went spritzing into the pot. How about if it hits it from the outside of the pot? Right, there's a pot of chal cooking on the stove, shaking my bottle of milk, and a spritz goes out and hits the outside of the pot. What happens then? So there are different opinions over here. In my opinion, the first question we ask is there in the contents in the pot 60 times the milk that hit the outside of the pot? It doesn't make a difference where the milk hit on top, on the bottom, against the food, above the food. One question, is there 60 times in the contents of the food, is there 60 times the milk that hit the pot? If yes, the food is fine. The pot needs to be kashered, but the food is fine.
The pot needs to be kashered no matter how much hit it?
What?
The pot needs to be kashered no matter how much hit it?
Oh, the pot always has to be kashered. Yes.
Even before?
Yeah, because we don't know if it went into the food. Maybe it's still in the wall of the pot. Yeah. Maybe it hits it from the outside. So we have to always work with the worst scenarios. Either it's still in the wall of the pot, or it went into the food. So if it went into the food, I have 60 times the milk in the food. If it's still on the wall of the pot, I need to cash it, so I don't use it again.
This is only Yatzeles, right?
Correct, right. This is only if it's Yatzeles. If it's not Yatzeles, it's just washable.
The example before with the soup and dairy soup, and you put the fleshy conserve in it, the pot needs to be cleaned to be kashered for the soup?
No, if the food is fine, then the pot will be fine.
Oh, but here you're taking cups of.
Right, over here it came from the outside. Right. Yeah.
The pot is metal, but the handles are in hard plastic. Can that be
kosher? It definitely is less of a problem. But can you kosher it? Of course you could kosher it. A hard plastic, you could kosher it with hagala. Can you leave it? In the case where it only needs hagala, yes. Yeah.
Just in the case of the spoon,
Yes. Right. Meaning, if I have in the contents of the pot or the chalent 60 times the size of the spoon that went in there, then yeah. Okay. Sometimes you're frying schnitzel on the fire and some oil spritzes out. Yeah, oil stays hot. Other liquids usually cool off as they're flying across the room. So by the time it hits whatever hits, it's already less than yatzlez, but so it should not be a problem. But oil could burn someone and when it spritzes. So that's fleishiga oil that when spritzing out hit my milchiga pot or my parva pot. So if you know the spot where it hit, then all you need to do is kasha that spot by boiling up hot water and pouring it over that spot. Because since it went in through a spritz, so it could come out through a spritz. However, if you don't know, then you'll have to kasha the whole pot if you don't know where it hit. But that's again another example of something that hit the outside of the pot. Okay, now the now all this until now we've been speaking about dairy with meat coming in contact with each other. What's the din if I want to use my dairy pot to cook pasta, something parif, cook potatoes, pasta, whatever it may be? What's the din of the food that's being cooked in there? So here again, ben yomo and eni ben yomo play a big role. I'm going to try to say it very clear, the rules as follows. If it's a pot, which is ben yomo, let's take, I use this pot within the last 24 hours for hot dairy. So it's a dairy pot, was used within the last 24 hours. Now I want to cook past it. The halach is that if I know that I'm going to be using this pasta with fleishig, then I'm not allowed to. And more than that, even if I did cook it in the pot, I made the pasta already, I cannot lechatchila mix it with fleishig. If it was already mixed with fleishig, then you could eat it. So if the pot is a ben yomo, was used within the last 24 hours for dairy, now I want to cook spaghetti to mix it with the meatballs, I'm not allowed to. And even if I did cook the spaghetti already, I cannot lechatchila go ahead and mix the spaghetti with the meatballs. If I mixed it already with the meatballs, then I could eat it. That's when it's a ben yomo. If the pot is an eine ben yomo, this dairy pot was not used within the last 24 hours for milchig, so then the halacha is that lechatchila I cannot cook in it the pasta, the spaghetti, knowing that I'm going to mix it with the meatballs. But if it was cooked already, then I could mix it with the meatballs. Once it was cooked ready. So I'll give you an example. Let's say for lunch, we need the pasta for a dairy lunch. So I cooked up a pot of pasta, and now I used whatever we needed, I used for the dairy lunch. Now I have leftover pasta from the lunch, which I want to use by supper to mix it with the meatballs. So here it depends. If that pot was a ben yomo, so l'chatchila you're not going to mix it with the meatballs. If you did already, you could eat it. If the pot was an eine ben yomo, so then, since it's leftover, I didn't cook it knowing that I'm going to mix it with the meatballs. I thought I'll eat it by lunch, but now I have leftovers, so now I could use it with the meatballs. Now, what sometimes happens is that Friday afternoon, I need to cook something some pasta for the deli salad or whatever it may be. And all my pots are being used. Or I'm cooking for Sheva Brachas and my big pots are fleishiga pots. And I'm having a milchiga Sheva Brachas. In that case, if the pot is an Einoi Ben Yomo, it was not used within the last 24 hours, then I could use it to cook in it this spaghetti, even though I know that I'm going to be using it with the other type, because that's called a B'diavad. that's equal to where it was done already, then I can mix it. Because I do not need to go to the neighbor to borrow a pot. It's enough to use this pot that's here. Also, if let's say I cook pasta in a dairy pot and I want to serve it at a fleishig meal, but it's not going to be eaten with any fleishig. It's going to be the entree before any fleishig comes to the table. I could eat it at the fleishig meal as the entree on a fleishig plate. That's fine. Just I'm not supposed to mix it with fleishig. That's so for dessert. I want to make the cake I only have a milchiga pan. I'm making the chocolate cake, which is going to be pariv. I'm serving it for dessert where no one's eating it with fleishig. Again, even though it's being served at the fleishig meal, but since it's not being eaten with fleishig, that is not a problem. What? It does make a difference. That does make a difference. Made pariv in a milchiga pot. And then, if it's benyam, you still can heat it up on the plata, but just you can't mix it with flesh. Yeah.
It's a little different, but if you make chalav, you can make flesh oven.
We'll get to oven separately.
But I have people wash up my house before they have like that chocolate.
You don't have to.
No, just go straight from the meat to the chocolate. I don't have to tell them to.
Right. As long as there's no milk in there. Okay, I think we covered this. In the next share, we'll discuss Charif. And then get into other things. Then we get into ovens and stovetops and microwaves and the dishwashers. Right? Thanks. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Can you tell something in a patient thing? Right. You have it with coffee. You can't have it. Like you're not mixing it. It's going to mix in your mouth.
Okay, so that's called mixing it.
Yeah, so you should.
Yeah, you could drink your coffee and then eat the cake, or eat the cake and then drink the coffee.
You can have the same meal?
You can have the same meal, just not with the other type, right? That was the case where you cook the pasta for the entree, just don't eat it with flesh.
But if it wasn't ben yomo, then
if it was not a ben yomo, you can't do it with das that you're going to be mixing it. But once it was made, okay.
Like if I take this cake.
I didn't know what it would mean. Correct. I thought it was only two carbs. I was like, one minute. As long as you're not eating with the flesh. It's ain't a minute.